Freilich and Chanukah. How is it that a Yom Tov such as Chanukah, that is always so cold and most of the time so dark, is a Yom Tov that makes me smile and most of us smile and feel so good? I would like to share a thought based somewhat on something I once heard from Rav Ephraim Waxman Shlita. Chazal tell us that there are certain wicks and oil that are not allowed to be used to light Shabbos candles. Yet, they're perfectly fine when it comes to lighting Ner Chanukah. Chidushei HaRim says that this concept doesn't only apply to the Gashmias of the candle itself, but also to the Ruchnias. The three components of the candle, Ner, Psila, and Shemen, are the Rashi Tevos Nefesh. The Chidushei HaRim is saying that souls that can't even be affected by the beauty of a Shabbos, the beauty of Shabbos candles, those souls can still be affected by the glow of Chanukah Licht. A soul that remains cold the rest of the year can be warmed by Chanukah. The Pasuk in Bereishis says, V'ha'aret ha'isa asahu v'avohu v'choshech al p'nei sahom. We're told that sahu v'avohu refers to the exile of Paros and Madai, to home, to the Gullus of Edom, and Choshech, to the Gullus of Yavan. Yavan is compared to Choshech, not only in the time of Gullus Yavan, Bayamim Ha'heim Bazman Hazeh. As we relive the Nisim of Chanukah, there once again front and center is the power of Greece, the power of darkness. The time of Chanukah in the physical world has the longest nights of the year. It's the only Yom Tov that begins when the moon is small, at the end of the month, when it's its darkest, when it's dark and cold. At this time, we also light the menorah that has the ability to light up our neshamos as we battle the darkness. So what is the darkness that we're battling? What is the koach of this darkness? Well, darkness is a dangerous thing. It's scary. Not because of the darkness itself necessarily, but because it doesn't allow us to navigate our surroundings. Imagine being in a room with magnificent, expensive furniture made of glass and crystal and brass and gold and silver, with hanging chandeliers and sconces on the walls. Now imagine that it is pitch black. You can't see your own hand in front of your face. And you need to get through that room. All that beautiful furniture of tremendous value, it is now simply reduced to dangerous obstacles. Yavan has tremendous accomplishments. Wisdom, creativity, beauty. But when you combine them with the koach of tumah, the darkness, they become extremely dangerous. Better if they never existed. Yavan takes beauty and turns it inside out. It takes Kedusha, Ruchnius, and turns it into Gashmius. The Greeks did not want to take and get rid of our Torah. They wanted to take the Torah HaKedusha and learn it like any other wisdom. In their darkness, they take things that are so worthwhile and make them into nothing than mere obstacles. Baruch Hashem, all forces act in pairs. And this is true of Tumah as well. The opposing force of Tumah of Yavan is the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael exemplified by Yosef HaTzadik. We always learn the parashios of Yosef around Chanukah time. Yosef was Yafas Mar'eh. He was beautiful. Similar to the Greeks who were from Yefes. As the Pasuk says, Yaft Elokim LeYefes. The Greeks represented beauty mitzad HaTumah. Interestingly enough, the gematria of Yosef and Antiochus is the same. Just like Yavan had the koach to take Ruchnius and turn it into Gashmius, Yosef, who represents the Midah of Yesod, which is internal beauty, Yosef takes Gashmius and turns it into Ruchnius. He takes the materialism of Olam Hazeh and is Mekadesh it. That's how he could raise an Ephraim and a Menasheh in Mitzrayim. But in reality, how do we see in darkness? Every entity has two parts, its physical, material, and its essence. We experience the physical aspect of something by touching it. We have to feel it to really know what it is. But the essence of something we discern through sight. When there's darkness, the essence eludes us. The Greeks, the outside world exists in this darkness. That's how they live, and that's how they view life. What is a human being to the Greeks? Someone beautiful, someone muscular, someone athletic. That's it. They're unable to grasp the essence. They can't look deeper inside and see the Tzelem Elokim. On Hanukkah, we're told, Ein lanu rishus lehishtamesh bohem, ela lirosam bilvad. We are only allowed to look at the Neros. The Neros help us to pierce the darkness. Hanukkah, from the word chinuch, means that we are to rededicate ourselves, to renew our connections. Interestingly, this often happens as a result of darkness, as the result of churban. There's an incredible story told about a death march during World War II, where the people were being marched through a city, and at night they were told, go sleep in the barn. The men went into the barn, and two of the men were from that city, and it was dark, and they were looking around the barn, and they realized that it wasn't a barn. It was the shul that had been turned into a barn. And they became so horrified, and they began to cry and touch the walls and kiss the walls. Our shul, look what they've done to our shul. How could they have done it with such a tragedy? Now imagine the Hashmonaim, after their victorious battle over the Greeks, walk into the Beis HaMikdash, the Heilige Beis HaMikdash, and they walk in, and they see that it's in a shambles. Can we imagine their horror? Can we also imagine the connection? The tremendous love that they felt at that point? That's renewal. It could be that we have something all along, we just don't appreciate it. Renewal is a unique opportunity on Hanukkah to renew those things that have become ragil. Same old, regular. But Hanukkah brings renewal to the regular. It is the only Yom Tov where we say Hallel without Musaf. It's like a special regular day. Consistently through our regular days, we do wonderful, beautiful things. We don't even realize that they're mitzvos. Acts that are and can be so full of kedusha. And we do so many mitzvos that we don't even pay attention to. There's an incredible story about the Chavetz Chaim. He walked into a pharmacy one day and he gave the pharmacist a big hug. And the pharmacist says, why are you hugging me? And the Chavetz Chaim says, because I'm mekana you. He says, you're mekana me? The pharmacist was a Mechal Shabbos. He was completely assimilated. You're mekana me? And the Chavetz Chaim said, yeah, I'm mekana you. What do you do all day long? You mix medication so that people can live. You save lives all day long. You build worlds all day long. I'm mekana you. The story goes that the pharmacist took these words very, very much to heart. And he began to think about them. And the story goes that he became a Lamed Vavnik. What changed? He was the same pharmacist. But what changed was the way he thought about himself and the way and thought about what he was doing. Nothing else changed. The story of Rabbi Waxman tells about his father-in-law. Rabbi Waxman's father lived in England, and he was diagnosed with an illness, and he had very short time to live. But by the end of his life, they called and said, you better come, it's only a matter of a few days. So Rabbi Waxman went to England. He walked into the hospital room Wednesday. His father, they said, he's not responsive. He was semi-conscious. He sat with him Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday, right before the Zman of Shabbos. His father-in-law woke up, opened his eyes, and said, Ephraim. And they were so shocked. He and his brother-in-law said, quick, get Tati's tefillin. We have just enough time to put on the tefillin before Shabbos. So they went, they got tefillin, they put it on. His father-in-law sat up in bed. He made the bracha loud and clear on his tefillin. And then he went to say the three parashios of Shema with a loud, clear, beautiful voice. Rabbi Waxman says he never heard such a thing. After Shabbos, After that, they took off the tefillin, the father-in-law lay down, he lost consciousness again, and he was nifter Matzah Shabbos. After this happened, Rav Waxman shared the story with a chash of a person in America. And the person said, "That's amazing. Wow, what an amazing story. That's such an unbelievable thing that your father-in-law did." The next day, the chash of a person called Rav Waxman back and he said, "You know, I was just thinking, I'm going to be putting on tefillin tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and as long as I'm going to be able to be putting on tefillin, I'm going to be putting on tefillin. I could also make such a bracha. What's stopping me from making such a bracha?" When our lives and mitzvos become regular, when they become habitual, we don't give them a second thought, or perhaps we don't even give them a first thought. Francis Collins, who is the director of NIH in Bethesda, quoted the speaker at his high school graduation, who asked the 18-year-old graduates, "Will you explore and develop the spiritual part of your identity throughout your lives, or will you wait for illness or advancing age to force a crash course?" He doesn't say who the speaker was, but how true. How many of us pay attention to the light within? We live in a world of darkness. When Hashem created the world, he put away the light that he first created for the first 36 hours. He put it away for the tzaddikim. But it exists on earth in a number of different fashions. It exists in the 36 Masechtas of Gemara, and also in the 36 Chanukah lights. Yosef represented the Midah of Yesod, as we said, which is the sixth Midah. And the epitome of Yesod is Sod Shabi Yesod, which is 6 times 6, which is also 36. It's represented by the 36 times the word or is mentioned in the Chumash. The light is accessible. It was put away, but it's accessible for those who choose to access it. But we live in the shadow of Yavan, and it overwhelms us. So the darkest point of the year enters Chanukah, with its renewal, its chinuch, its chain, near Chanukah. And we use the light to transform habit to holy and spiritual. There's an amazing story about a badchan that was going to perform at a chasana where one of the guests would be the Satmar Rebbe. He asked the Satmar Rebbe ahead of time if he had permission to imitate the Rebbe's davening on Hoshana Rabbah. The Rebbe agreed, for Simchas Chasan Makala. As the Badchan was doing his imitation, which was fabulous, he saw the Rebbe was crying hysterically. As soon as he finished, he went over and began to ask Mechila, "I feel terrible. Did I hurt the Rebbe's feelings?" The Rebbe looked at him and said, No, you just imitated me so well. I'm wondering if maybe year after year, I just imitate myself." We need to find and bring out the light in our everyday avoda to reconnect to its essence. On Shabbos Chanukah, we always read the Parsha of the Nesi'im. Over and over again, we read that they brought the same gift. Why? And there are different reasons. But perhaps it's because of its hischadshus. Each time that gift was brought, it was special. Each time it was unique. Each time it was different. It was a different person bringing it, and that gift was never brought before. And even if it's the same person, it's not the same gift. The difference is how we see it, how we see ourselves, and what it means to us. There's a story that Aaron Cutler used to tell about a man who put in an escalator from the train in New York so that the people would come up out of the train. They would go up the escalator where his business was. He wanted them to go up that side of the block, so he put an escalator in. And people would use the escalator. It would be hot, and they'd be schlepping packages, and they'd be tired at the end of the day, and they would use his escalator. He put it in order to get business. Rav Aaron said he could just think along the same way. He could just think that I'm doing a mitzvah. Every single time someone uses the escalator, it's a mitzvah. But he didn't think that way. He was thinking, I want to get business. Contrast that with a woman who lived in the old yeshiva in Yerushalayim. She was paralyzed. She had no family. The Ma'aril Diskin went to visit her, and he asked, "What can I do for you?" And she said, "Give me a bracha for Arichas Yamim." This woman was paralyzed, bedridden. She had no family. Her apartment was dilapidated. She had nothing. He said, you want a bracha for Arichas Yamim? Why? She answered, every week, there's a nurse comes in once a week and washes me and cleans me. And once that nurse comes, I'm able to make the bracha of Shehakol Niyeh Bidvaro. The rest of the week, I'm not able to do that. Give me a bracha, Rebbe, that I'll be able to make that bracha over and over again. He was stunned. We make brachos. We prepare supper. We make Shabbos. We call our parents, those of us that have that tzuchus, and other things that we can do for them. We speak in a calm, loving way to our husbands and our children. We prepare our classes. We speak to parents. We have students over. We focus on an individual student. We help our colleagues. And the list of these things that we're doing anyway goes on and on and on. All it really takes to change it from habit to holy is a drop of mindfulness. Ma'at min ha'ar, docha harbe min ha'choshach. That's really what Chanukah is all about. The B'nai Yisaskar says that in the time of Mashiach, most people say that's the time that we're in, every tiny effort is so precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because our struggle is so great, because the darkness is so dark. But ma'at min ha'ar, a little light, docha harbe min ha'choshach, drives away so much darkness. That's what we Jews have done for generations. And if you'll give me just a little bit more time, I want to share a few stories with you. I doubt that there's a darker place than Auschwitz. And let me share a story of light. There was a man in Auschwitz who was very driven. He was very curious about what was going on inside of the crematorium. So one night he approached the crematorium and he heard sounds and he was terrified. The dead bodies are talking. He opened the door and he sees a few Jewish men sitting off to the side of the crematorium room, and they're saying Tehillim. And he said, what are you doing? They said, it's our job at the end of each day to take the bodies and put them into the ovens. That's our job. It's almost like we're the Chevra Kadisha. But we can't give these bodies a proper burial. So instead, every night, we sit and say a Kapitel Tehillim for each body that we put into the ovens. When I first heard the story, I was so upset about it. And then, you'll excuse me, but I'll share with you what came to mind. I heard Laurie Gottman's voice. It said to me, Gitti, we can't control what happens to us. We can only control how we respond to it. What choices did these men have? They didn't have a lot of choices, but they chose to say Tehillim for the nefashos of these kedoshim. Another story from Bergen-Belsen on Chanukah. The Blujeva Rebbe took a wooden clog, a thread from his concentration camp uniform, and some black shoe polish as oil. As he prepared to light the menorah, not far from the heaps of bodies, the living skeletons came around to join him in the mitzvah. The Rebbe lit the candle and beautifully sang the first two brachos. As he was about to say the third bracha, he suddenly turned around looking for something, looking behind him, and then quickly turned back and in a strong, comforting voice sang the last bracha. Among the group who had gathered was a Mr. Zamolchowski, who was one of the leaders of the socialists. He was a very clever and sincere person who never missed an opportunity to discuss matters of religion, faith, and truth. As soon as he could, he made his way over to the Rebbe and he asked, Rebbe, you're a smart and honest person. I can understand the need to light a menorah, and even in such terrible times. I can even understand why you said the second bracha. But the third bracha? Shehechayanu, v'kimanu, v'higiyanu, lazman hazeh? How could you say that when there are hundreds of bodies laying in the shadow of these lights? When there's skeletons roaming around and millions are being massacred? For this you're thankful? For this you give praise? This you call keeping us alive? The Rebbe looked at him and he said, Zamolchowski, You're 100% right. When I reached the third bracha, I also hesitated. And I asked myself, can I make this bracha? I turned to find the Zenera Rebbe and ask him if I should actually make this bracha. But just as I turned, I saw this crowd of Jews standing with their faces, expressing their faith, their devotion, and their deliberation as they were listening to the lighting of the menorah. And I said to myself, if Hashem has such a nation that at times like these, when at the same time as lighting the menorah, they see heaps of bodies of their fathers and brothers and sons, and death is looking at them from every corner, if despite all of this, they stand with devotion listening to the Chanukah brachos, if they're such a people with so much amunah and desire, then I am mechuyav to make the third bracha. Mr. Zamachowski and the Blizhava Rebbe were looking at the same thing. But he saw dead bodies and suffering. The Rebbe saw deeper. He saw people who maintained incredible faith despite their horrific circumstances. Not all truths are easily visible. We live in darkness. Whether they be truths of the greatness of our actions or of our faith, using the light of Chanukah can be a start to help us see deep beauties of our lives. Ladies, I think that none of us here need these stories. We have our own stories of greatness. Of ladies that clearly knew how to light up the darkness. Were there ever too many tutoring calls for Mrs. Kleiner to make if it would help a student? Too much shopping to do Erev Yontif for girls who needed clothes? She didn't give up on me until we could figure out the best way to help each and every girl. And if money was an issue, just asked her children. She went to them or anyone else so that the girls would have what they needed. How many times did Mrs. Jacobowitz say to me, there's nothing to worry about. Relax, I'll take care of it. You just tell me how much you need and what you need and when you need it and how you need it and it will be done. No matter what it was. Her purpose was to make someone else's life a little bit more manageable. And I will never forget the PTA meeting where I, sitting next to Mrs. Gutman, the mother said to Mrs. Gutman, and I heard it with my own ears, thank you so much for teaching my daughter how to shower. It's just not my thing. Laurie smiled her genuine smile of love. It was her mission to give each girl what they needed, all judgments aside. No one-size-fits-all approach. Each person was unique, and each situation deserved its proper response. Our dear friends were soldiers in an elite unit. They never faltered because they never lost sight of their purpose. They had special light-up-the-world glasses, and they saw what needed to get done, and they did it without hesitation, always full steam ahead. I'd like to leave you with a very simple and powerful story. It's a story about my son. Some of you know him. He likes to speak at my kids' Sheva Brachos. My son Pesach Aharon, our son Pesach Aharon, is learning in the mirror in Eretz Yisrael. And he has a good friend, a boy by the name of Yerachmiel, who's 5'2" and blind, completely blind. One Thursday evening, my son saw Yerachmiel trying to schlep a shtender down from the platform right by the Aron Kodesh. As you all know, the mirror is packed, wall to wall, with people and shtenders and chairs. And during the week, there's so little room that they actually put chairs and shtenders on the platform by the Aron Kodesh. Thursday night, Yerachmiel was, imagine the scene, trying to schlep a shtender down the stairs from the Aron Kodesh. Pesach Aharon saw him and ran over and said, Yerachmiel, let me help you. He took the shtender and took it down the stairs and put it there and started to walk away. And Yerachmiel said, no, you didn't finish. Take down all the chairs and all the shtenders. So he did. And he said to me, you know what, Ima? The Beis Medrash is full during the week with Avreichim. On Friday, many of the Avreichim don't come, and those standers and chairs are not used. And what Rachmiel felt was that it's a bizayon to the Beis Medrash if those chairs and standers are not being used, that they should just be a mess in front of the Aron Kodesh. He wanted all the chairs and standers taken down, so it would be a bakavadik look to the Beis Medrash and to the Aron Kodesh. Ima, he said, he might be blind, but he sees a lot more clearly than I do. Be'ezus Hashem, I wish us all that the light of our Chanukah licht help us to really see and appreciate our purpose. And together, may we continue to bring Nachas Ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be Zochah to see the Gula Shalema, the Meir of Yom Yom.